Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 83 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. Today's guest is Mike Stacey. Mike is a sports psychologist and a strength and conditioning coach. Really, today we draw on his expertise in the psychology realm, and this is really the mindfulness episode. So we talk about what mindfulness is, why it's important, and most valuable, I think, how we can get athletes in a gym or on ice setting to be more mindful, and therefore improve performance, etc. We talk a lot about Mike's latest article for the site called Mindful Cueing in Training. So for any references to that, you can head on over to the site and read the full article today. Without further ado, here is Mike Stacey. Mike, welcome back to the Hockey Strength Podcast. How are you?
Man, I can't complain. I'm doing well. It's good to be back. Had the pleasure of meeting and chatting with Brian and knowing him for a few years, and our relationship is just starting, so I'm pretty happy.
You were on the show in 2017, so it's been almost three full years. What's changed in your life? At that time, you were working with the Firebirds, yep. Right? So what are you doing in and out of the hockey world right now?
Since 2017, I got lucky enough to work with Brazil Ice Hockey as a goalie coach and strength coach, alongside of my private practice and, you know, doing the work out of Plymouth and traveling a little bit. Then I stepped down this year actually to kind of consult with athletes on the side who were still interested in working with me a little bit, but focus more on building the sports psych practice, and accepted a job over at De La Salle Collegiate pretty intentionally to work with kids at the high school level, because I noticed a lot of gaps in terms of movement competency, physical preparation, and some of the mental game stuff that you'd hope that guys at the highest levels would just know and have in their back pockets. And you ask, hey, you know, where did you pick this up? Where didn't you learn this? And you find out a lot of it comes down to their teen years.
Why else were you intrigued by high school kids? Is it because they're fun?
Oh, I mean, shoot, man. They're real funny. Any level is fun. Like, I've enjoyed myself wherever I've worked. I chose high school kids really for that reason. And it was, selfishly, you're not as worried about getting fired every off season when there's a staff change or, you know. So the potential for stability was very nice, providing I do a good job, which there's no guarantee. I could just mess this whole thing up. Who knows?
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider, of course, when you're choosing where to work. And like places like the NHL and even NCAA, there's like not a ton of job stability, right? Coaching change doesn't matter how good a job you're doing, unless you're Mike Potenza. Mike Potenza will hang around forever. Let's talk about, so your most recent article is called Mindful Cueing in Training. So tell us the story of how mindful cueing came into existence for you.
Okay. Sure. I started out with my sports psychology practice really focused on the CBT model, like cognitive behavioral therapy. And I think it's a great approach and has all kinds of utility for people who are in sport or suffering from severe clinical, you know, grade conditions. But I started reading a book, call it two-ish years ago, called the Mindfulness Acceptance Commitment Model, or something to that effect by Gardner and Moore. And all these things that I was doing with the CBT approach for different teams and different athletes, where you'd see mixed effectiveness, like something works for somebody but doesn't work for another, or you teach everything by the book just right and you hear them say, well, I'm still struggling. Like, this isn't, nothing's clicking for me. And you say, well, have you tried keeping on trying? They're like, well, yeah. I was like, all right, just do that, I guess. You know? And some people are like really helped. Like the vast majority of people that I worked with like saw benefits, but it was for me the sticking point of there's 5-10% that are still struggling, whether it's with performance or with just feeling comfortable at the level they're playing at. And that book really clarified for me why some of those things were happening. And it was because a lot of the CBT approach is great for athletics, but I liked mindfulness particularly because it was more in tune to an athlete's experience in and outside of sport, where you have to deal with uncomfortable thoughts, challenging emotions, difficult situations, and you can't block them out. You can't force them out or eliminate them with any real success. You have to kind of back burner them during the course of the game and focus on what you have to do right there in the present. And then after the game's over, you can then unpack and dive into and figure out. But a lot of the skills to do with mindfulness were really tuned and tailored into, I'm performing right now. What do I need to do? How do I accept what's going on? How do I focus in and dial into the present to make sure that I'm successful? So when it came to cueing, I started looking at, okay, well, if mindfulness is working really nicely with my approach as a mental skills coach, are there carryovers and are there things that I can do as a strength coach that integrate this skill set and can up my game as a coach, my athlete's game in terms of being able to perform or do certain movements, or just help them learn how to deal with distractions better while they're training, while they're playing. So the mindful cueing really came about by saying, hey, this all looks and works really nicely with the mental game component. Are there things that as a strength coach I can do and integrate to build mental skills into their training so they have it in their back pocket and make training a little bit more efficacious? That was such a long answer. I'm so sorry. Oh,
God. That's better. The less I talk, the better. And what's interesting about mindfulness is it's a concept we all understand. It's mainly, maybe I'm going to let you define it. How would you define mindfulness? And
the best definition that I ever heard and will steal now is it is paying attention in a particular way.
Right. But when you say the word mindfulness to a high schooler, especially a high school hockey player, and I'm thinking of some particular high school boys in my head who have rolled their eyes when I have said this word to them, you lose them right away.
Yeah.
How does cueing change that?
Cueing changes that by learning, you know, anytime you cue, you're trying to share a common vocabulary with specific words or symbols that have a lot of packed meaning into them, like we touched on in the article. And cueing helps with your saying, okay, I already know how to coach this movement. I already know how to coach this drill. Are there things that I can wrap in that will teach an athlete how to ignore distractions during this drill? Are there things that I can wrap in to get them to really pay attention to what they're feeling or how they're moving? Are there things that I can do to prime them to perform just a little bit more focusedly? And you know, the answer is yes. You can change your language. Like, language has got so much power to it to make the delivery and the teaching kind of, you know, below their radar. So you're imparting mental skills without ever really saying, hey bro, you ever hear about, you know, mental skills training? That's pretty cool, right? I'm a cool guy too.
Right. It's teaching them the mental skills without even knowing they're learning them. And like you're teaching them to meditate and focus, and they don't even realize it.
Yeah. And like you said, mindfulness, meditation, you know, even mental skills training, as popular as it's gotten since the 70s, all, you know, catch some eye roll and some checkout. And you want to make sure that, well, you've already got this team or this athlete to buy in and believe, like, you are good, you are trustworthy, and you're someone that they can listen to and see good things happen. So the last thing you want to do is use that language that you've got so much power with already and lose some interest or lose some trust.
Take me through a conversation, it can be real or hypothetical, okay, where you're employing cues to get athletes to be more mindful.
Okay.
Start with painting the scene. Are we in your office one-on-one? Are we in the gym? Are we foam rolling?
Okay. One drill that we built into the recovery process, or the recovery circuit for some of our training days, was bent leg breathing, which is laying on your back, making sure that you've got lower back flat to the ground, legs are bent, feet planted, and you're trying to breathe diaphragmically. And we all know that diaphragm breathing is a great skill to get your the muscles that support and help your diaphragm work engaged, all your intrinsic like breathing muscles, all those guys working together. And it's also a great parasympathetic nervous system, like cool down kind of thing. So you don't deliver and talk about a lot of that. You say, all right, we're going to go ahead and do bent leg breathing. Find some prime real estate around you and bend your knees, plant your feet, make sure that you feel 5 points of contact. It's going to be your head, shoulders, lower back, butt, and feet. Okay. Make sure you're feeling those things in contact with the ground. And without losing those sensations, I want you to, with your hand on your belly, take deep breaths. If you feel that your hand is moving with each breath, you know that you're doing this correctly. You go, say, let's go through 5 or 6 breaths together. You count off on the clock because you've got a good rhythm by now of how long it goes. Okay, I want you to continue doing this drill, but as you're doing it, it's going to be really tempting to get distracted. It's going to be really tempting to chat with the people next to you, and it's going to get very easy to lose focus on what you're feeling. So what I want you to do is, when you become distracted, pay attention to what you're feeling again. It's okay, it's normal, you're going to get distracted. What I want you to do is focus on what you're feeling and focus on what you're doing. And then 5-10 more breaths. All right, good. How do you feel? What was easy? What was challenging? What was the easiest thing for you to pay attention to? And then you get feedback.
What do you do when you get, when an athlete is having trouble paying attention, or they're frequently getting distracted?
You're talking about like talking to their teammates, talking to their buddies, or you mean like just not doing the exercise?
How about the athlete with the best intentions? Like, they're not intentionally goofing off, mm-hmm, but something about the way their brain is working does not lend well to maintain focus on a breathing exercise or even a strength exercise.
Yeah, easy. Okay. Easy example. A lot of kids are, especially just learning, just adopting things where like they have to keep their attention on something for a long period of time, are really easy to get distracted. So one of the things that I tend to do is I'll like go over to them either during the drill, if there's enough space that somebody next to them can't hear conversation well, or we'll approach them after and say, hey, tell me what was really hard with paying attention. Tell me what made it difficult to stay focused while you're doing this. And then you get some feedback, because you go and reprimand somebody and you're not getting a lot of relationship built. You're not finding out whys. You're just reprimanding because you were frustrated and you're a grown adult that wants someone else to do something. And that's not productive at all. So you find out like, all right, what's catching your attention? What are you distracted by? Or what's making this difficult? And you find out some information. A lot of times it's, I'm trying to do this, but my mind just goes nuts. I can't pay attention to just feeling this. Or it's, I don't see the benefit. I think this is kind of dumb. And they check out. And either way, your answer can be kind of similar. Is, well, it's okay if you think this is kind of dumb. It's something that we're going to be doing because it's got some performance benefits. What's dumb about it? Do you think it doesn't work? Do you think it's just dumb and it's not like other things you're doing? You do a little bit of like question, question, answer, digging. And in the case of somebody who can't like pay attention well because they're distracted by so many things going on, find out what they're distracted by, find out what's on their mind, but ultimately either route can circle back to the same thesis. Like, okay, cool. So we know that you think this is dumb. We know that you don't want to do this, or we know that you are getting distracted by all this stuff going on. That's normal. That's natural. That's okay. Your mind is going to wander when you try to reel it in and get it to do something very specific for a focused period of time. So think it's dumb, think it's like unimportant, or get distracted by your girlfriend, your homework, prom, whatever it is. But when you do notice that, what I want you to do is try to pay attention to this specifically. And ideally that this specifically is whatever in conversation you found out is very easy for them to pay attention to, the lowest hanging fruit.
What are some examples of that lowest hanging fruit?
Lowest hanging fruit I've found for most athletes, regardless of age, is the feeling of your own breath, the sound of your own breath, or the sound of things going on around you. Obviously in a drill where it's focused on feeling and breathing, you'd want to tune them into feeling their breath, hearing their breath. Other times when you're teaching mindfulness skills and you know that the auditory or visual cues are really easy, those are like super, super easy for people to pick up and glom onto, regardless of age level. So you say, hey, I want you to anchor your attention on this focus point. Pay attention to that while you're aiming. Like, look at this. Or, okay, before the play starts, I want you to tune in, check in to the things around you. Listen for the ref's whistle. When you hear the whistle, that's your cue to tune into the play. And those things, those kinds of things, being mindful of sensory stuff is some good low-hanging fruit, whether it's tactile, whether it's auditory, whether it's visual. We just know that, like, cueing movements that are held, timed, you know, things like that for strength, core control, breathing, it tends to work really well on the tactile side. When it's drills for explosiveness, speed, usually you want guys to focus on exploding off of something or bring the line closer to you, or, you know, such and such.
And what about the flip side of an athlete who's doing a great job being mindful and paying attention, and they might not even know it? How do you reward that and encourage that?
Sometimes, like, kids at the high school level, I'm finding out, like, love to have opportunities to, like, lead. Some don't want to be, like, out front, lead the group, but you can say, hey, you're really, really good at this. Would you mind taking this freshman with you through the drill, or like working with them through it? And, you know, that's sometimes pretty positive. Guys who like leading groups, who like being out in front, or they're like captains, you can reward and say, hey, I want you to teach this exercise for me. These are some of the cues I'm going to go over. Put in your language, but make sure you touch on these things. Other times you just do the simple, like, hey, I noticed you're doing this. That's a great job. We don't have like a Jedi mindfulness t-shirt to hand out yet or anything like that, but, you know, maybe it's on the horizon.
That would be pretty sweet.
That'd be all right, eh?
what would be the criteria for that? Like, when are you officially a Jedi?
I'd say when you float.
So I don't think we're gonna be handing out too many t-shirts in that case.
Yeah. I call someone who's a mindfulness Jedi someone that's consistently effortful at paying attention in a particular way and capable of managing their behavior in the presence of distractions. Someone who is consistently able to do those things, like, you've got it nailed down.
And does this change at all for you? Whether will you use like cues that hockey players will understand more, like maybe something to do with ice, or does it really just depend on the situation?
Yeah, no, that's great. I had a hockey player that I was working with not too long ago who had a lot of challenge in the time prior to the game. Like, when the game started and you got the first couple of touches of the puck, like, everything was fine. And you kind of slip into the zone. But that period before the game was real, real challenging, with a lot of distracting thoughts, a lot of what ifs, a lot of like, oh, this could go wrong. So we looked for specific things in that athlete's warm-up that were very, for him, tactile, worked great. So we're very like tactile. So when you're doing those first couple circles of the rink, I want you to feel your edges each stride for those first two laps. When we were working with, okay, you do the laps, you guys break into drill lines, you do some passing, you do some whatever it is. We worked on tracking the puck into your stick and feeling the touches as you handle it before the next pass. So things that were anchors for attention in the moment during his warm up that wouldn't add extra time were built into the things that he was doing and were tools to quiet those thoughts, not eliminate, not block them out, not get rid of them, but quiet them by focusing on something else that's very present, very low hanging fruit, and very easy. So hockey players, you could talk about feeling, like feeling the blades, feeling your touches. Some guys, when they're on the bench, their mind wanders, and you can ask, hey, when you notice your mind wander, just feel your equipment. That's something super easy. It's literally on you. Just feel what you're wearing, your gloves.
Don't smell your gloves, though. Definitely don't smell your gloves.
Yeah, no, yeah. We avoid the olfactory stuff. Yeah, we avoid the smells. Other times, like goalies, a lot of your job is so visual. Having been a goalie who wasn't very talented myself, I can speak from experience. So you might say, all right, I want you to lay out for me, what are the things that you tend to pay attention to and when? What are the things that you're reading and looking at? You notice, okay, well, I know that my attention drifts into the what ifs. What's my coach thinking? Will I get pulled when the play's on the other end of the ice? Okay, cool. What would benefit your performance and demand your attention in that time that we could shift your focus very effortfully and purposefully towards? Well, watching how other players are playing the game, watching for breakdowns and potential rushes, like, okay, cool, yeah. No, that's a very mindful thing to do. That is an opportunity for you to read, be ready to respond, and a way to keep your thoughts grounded in the here and now and what's inside the glass. Great. Or you talk about when they need to shift their attention to the puck in the oncoming rush. So when is it time on what parts of the ice to start reading the player, their hands, the lie of their stick, their hands, like which hand they are. And when is it time to shift focus to the puck? And you give guys mindfulness cues pretty easily for hockey, for any sport, by just noticing, like, and having the conversation, what do you pay attention to? What in the moment would benefit your performance most? And how do you pay effortful attention to that in the moment? And they answer the questions themselves more often than not.
You repeat that question, because I think that's the essence of it.
Lord Almighty, I wish I remembered better what I said. I believe it was to the effect of, what is it that you can pay attention to in the present moment very purposefully that will benefit your performance in the here and now? And usually they can answer that question themselves, and you just help them cue it up and build it.
That's something we as coaches can also ask ourselves as we're coaching, I think, as well.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I do that as a coach and as a sports psych too. Like, there's times where I've been very nervous to work with a certain client, or I've been very nervous to work with a certain team, and I need to pay very focused, effortful attention to, these are the functions that you are going to perform in order to do a good job. And you are allowed to be nervous, you're allowed to be frustrated with yourself, you stumble over words, you're allowed to be anxious before this happens, but just it doesn't matter what you think or what you feel. There's just what has to happen. So go ahead and focus on this, Mike.
I love that. Let's move back to the weight room.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously being mindful can apply to every single moment in our lives in a sense. Mm-hmm. Right. So I want to give strength coaches a really tactical way to start to apply this. And something that pretty much we all do before sessions is foam roll. So what would an intro to mindful cueing look like in a foam rolling setting?
Okay. There's actually a really, really pretty good guide article that I put together for strength coaches on foam rolling that after the podcast, I'd be happy to share. It's literally a take this foam rolling exercise guidebook and apply it using your own language, put your own letterhead on it, put your own logo. You can have this. But yeah, foam rolling is a great one. I'll share that with you after the podcast. You can cue it up using all of your own language and be very intentional to mention while you're doing this, I want you to pay attention to what you're feeling in like XYZ muscle group. You're going to notice things that feel very good. You're going to feel things that are tight, tough, and potentially painful spots. When you're on those spots, follow, you know, QRS protocol, and then go back to scanning your muscle for more of those tight sore spots. Do this, you know, as many reps as you're going to assign, and you can cue them up to say, hey, I know it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to experience some physical discomfort. I want you to notice that discomfort, but pay attention to holding it on that spot for amount of time or whatever it is that you're doing, and let them go about it. When they switch to the other leg, the other arm, the other, you know, side of their thoracic spine, you can potentially cue them up to say, hey, we're halfway through this. At the halfway point, it is easy to get distracted. What I want you to do is when you notice your mind drift off, it's okay. It's normal. Don't get upset about it. Don't get frustrated by it. It's just the way it is. Focus back on feeling this. You just felt it on the other side. Try to find it.
It's cool because then maybe some of that mindfulness that we foster during foam rolling might carry over into our strength training.
Ideally. So the nice thing about mindfulness is it's something you can do. You can actively practice all the time, but having done, let's say 5, 10, 20 minutes of mindfulness practice in a day, you notice carryover benefits for the rest of your day in terms of like emotional regulation, focus of attention, mood. So absolutely doing that foam rolling, integrating those things into your warm-up can have some benefit for helping your players be a little bit more grounded during the training session and potentially help them focus. I really like it as a way to say, all right, I've taught these guys how to dial in, how to focus. And when I coach, I make sure that everybody knows what they're supposed to be feeling, what they're supposed to be doing. So the hope is when they go to their training or they go to their workouts, they can remember, all right, during foam rolling, when I was distracted, I was supposed to do this. Let me apply the same type of thing to, you know, my bridge with a reach, to my squat and feeling my position before I unrack, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. So that's kind of the hope, is they'll take that lesson of being taught to fish and then go catch more during the training session. But even if they don't, there's at least some carryover benefits for later.
And is this might even happen at a subconscious level. We might have to go to like, this might be more of like a literature question, but players might not even be aware of that transition into other areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Short answer, yes.
Cool. And so we can teach our players to be more mindful and really like that's going to have a huge impact on every area of their life. You know, like this is the kind of stuff that transcends the weight room and transcends the ice.
Yeah. The hope would be that as you get very clever about and very comfortable with, most importantly, teaching and cueing people to focus on specific things in the moment, learn to notice when they're distracted and reel their attention in by refocusing on some things very specific, that you can get comfortable with applying this to more and more sport-like activities. So you move from foam rolling into some more low-hanging fruit that you're comfortable with, that's easy, like let's say your held exercises. Maybe you build it into your cars or your mobility stuff. And cars are already a beautiful way to be mindful because you're exploring an end range, accepting the limit, and trying to work along it. that's a great way to teach mindfulness and the skill of acceptance, not forcing past a limit, just accepting what you notice and working within certain bounds. So as you get really comfortable with building these things into your warm-up or into certain more skilled movements, like, hey, we're going to do sprints to a visual cue. It's going to get easy to get distracted. When you get distracted, it takes a fraction of a second more to notice something and react to it. So what I want you to do is be focused on this point. When you notice this point, that's when you take off. And you can build those into like more sport-like activities. So the hope is, yeah, when they get to the ice, they can say, okay, well, I am distracted on the bench. Let me just dial my attention into watching the play in front of me and watching my teammates, watching the other team. Or you can even with the, if you have a great relationship with the head coach, talk to them about, hey, I heard about ways to build mental skills training into sport drills. Do you have a passing drill at the start? These are some cues for it. What do you think? And you can talk about how to get guys dialed in on the ice doing certain drills or exercises. And it's literally just power of language. You're not adding or subtracting any exercises. You're just changing how you talk about them.
And there are so many great modalities that we're learning about. And I love what you just said there at the end, that this doesn't add any time. This just which is like obviously the limiting factor a lot of our workouts.
Yes. Absolutely.
This just makes everything we do better.
Yeah, that's the hope. Like it for the strength coach, it will take time to like learn the language and begin using it. But all strength coaches are incredibly clever people, are very intentional about how they speak. It's not going to take long to pick up. You're nailed on the head. It's just how you teach an exercise, teach a movement, teach a drill, and the conscious choice to include certain words.
I'm going to give an action step to our listeners because this can apply in so many scenarios. I want you to think about one part of your workout, your team's workout, one-on-one workout, whatever, where you can apply mindful cues or mindfulness in general for just what do you think, Mike? A minute to start?
Yeah, honestly, you see changes in brain structure and function typically after like 20 minutes of practice 5 days a week, but that's unreasonable to start with. Like most of the athletes that I work with, I give them the goal of, man, let's see 2 minutes a day. And they're like, no, I can do more. It's like, let's start here. So absolutely. What do you do for up to 1 to 2 minutes that you can cue mindfulness in? That's huge.
And then from there, you just build up.
100%, yeah. One of the really neat models out there is the mindfulness sport performance enhancement model, where they quite literally build a action plan for you and give you a lot of teaching points for taking mindfulness from basic skills like breathing into now I'm doing warm-up drills for my sport, or now I'm doing things in between breaks and play. And
fantastic. We'll put a link to that also on the podcast notes. Let's wrap up with what are you working on these days? Who are you working with? How can people reach out?
Sure. Currently, I'm working as an assistant athletic director for De La Salle Collegiate as a strength coach primarily and helping them build a athletic performance department. I started up there in November. I also own a mental skills coaching or sports psych coaching practice based out of Plymouth. And folks can get in contact with me fairly easily. Just shoot an email my way or go to my website, MikeStaceyMentalSkills.com, and send me a message on the contact form. Otherwise, I'm happy to put phone, email out there after the podcast. That's, you know, happy to be a help if someone needs.
You do one-on-one.
Any questions, too, shoot. If there's questions and it's like, hey, Mike, you botched the delivery of this. I would like to know, you know, XYZ, please, please ask me.
Are you doing mostly one-on-one sports psychology? for your
presently
company?
Presently, it is almost exclusively one-on-one sports psychology. I'm not working with any teams at the moment, but that doesn't mean that I'm not open to it. It's just how the chips have fallen.
Well, Mike, thanks again for doing this. Every coach right now, plan out how you're going to put aside, not even put aside, just take 2 minutes of your 75-minute workout with your team or your client and incorporate a mindful cue into them. Mike, any last thoughts, final thoughts?
The hardest thing that you'll probably encounter is helping kids reel their focus in, or adults reel their focus in, from things that are distracting and people who want to be perfect at it from the get-go. And the best thing to tell them is it's literally impossible to be perfect at it. Your mind is going to wander. That's how we're built. The most poignant thing that you can do, the most important thing that you can do, is get reps of refocusing by tuning your attention back into, you know, X. What is X? What's the thing that you need to focus on? So assuring that the challenges are normal, they're okay, they're part of the bag, is a huge one and a big troubleshooting step for a lot of guys.
Yeah, that's a great point, right? Like, it's a practice you can't, there's no pass fail, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming again, once again on the show. And hopefully we will have some more articles, podcasts, whatever, other content from you for HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
I'm very much hoping so and looking forward to it. Thank you so much for chatting with me. This was great.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. Head on over to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com right now to read Mike's latest article, Mindful Cueing in Training. You can access everything on the site for just $1 for 30 days and then $14.95 a month after that, or just $99 for the entire year. Once again, thanks for listening, and I will see you soon.